This is the Ag Market Network's monthly cotton conference call, brought to you by Cotton Incorporated and by Certified Fibermax. You can find more online at agmarketnetwork.net.
We want to welcome everyone today to the Ag Market Network. This is December the 10th. Joining us today as our lead speaker will be Kip Butts. Kip's a member of our panel. He is Director of Energy Services and Senior Cotton Analyst with Informa Economics. The rest of our panel, Dr. O.A. Cleveland, Dr. John Robinson, and Gerald Nieper, are also with us today. We want to recognize and thank our major sponsor, Bayer Crop Science. We thank them for all that they do to make our program possible. Kip, thanks for being with us and leading us off in our discussion of cotton.
Good morning. Well, I wanted to first just chat a little bit about the crop report we received yesterday and the WASDE report. I don't think for most people there were very many surprises here. The U.S. production was cut 250,000 bales. All of that, essentially 252,000, was in the southeast, primarily the South Atlantic states, which have had just horrific weather, and that has decreased that yield pretty sharply. Got a little bit of a decrease in the central belt, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, you know, the typical mid-south region, and there was no change at all to the Pima numbers. As I say, there's no real surprise in this for most folks who have been looking at this very closely. The other adjustment on the U.S. report was a reduction in the exports from 10.2 to 10. Again, I think folks have been watching the export sales report for a while here, and some of the indications worldwide would suggest that's also not a huge surprise. If we switch gears now and move to the world numbers, we're in a situation here where a couple of adjustments on the 2013 and 14 crop years kind of just worked down to a 70,000 bale increase in beginning stocks on the world level. We dropped almost 2 million bales, 1.92, I guess, million bales in production, primarily a drop in Pakistan and in China. Again, neither of those were big surprises. And, of course, the U.S. dropped 250 as well. But, again, those are not surprises to most people who have been following those. Some folks, I think, might be a little bit surprised we didn't get a small reduction in India. But that may still come down the pike. There's a lot of conversation there that the northwest part of the country may be a little bit more damaged by the whitefly situation than at least has been reflected so far. Meal use worldwide got a reduction in China, which is the headliner, you know, 500,000 bales there. Pakistan got a drop in meal use. And then we had a lot of mix and matches. Vietnam was up a little bit, Bangladesh up a little bit, little minor changes in there. But the bottom line is we lost 200,000 bales in meal use, which lets us with ending stocks down 1.7 million, which is, you know, a step in the right direction. If we look at the foreign stocks without U.S. and China, that too was reduced 1.15 million bales, and that again, excuse me, that again is a step in the right direction as far as most folks are concerned, thinking about potential for price. When you start working these excess supplies down, it's like I say, it's not a game changer, but it does move you a step in the right direction. So I guess realistically, that kind of covers that report. Unless OA or Gerald or John, do you have something you want to add that can shed some more light on this?
Excellent report. Sums that up for me.
Okay. Well, I guess we got that one behind us. Pat, which way do you want to go now? What do you want to?
Well, anything else you want to talk about before we just kind of open it up for everybody?
Well, yeah, we talked before. I'm just going to chat a bit about, I want to follow up what John had to say last month. By the way, John, I wanted to compliment you on the way you talked about the downstream sort of problems with the U.S. Meal use and consumption. I want to expand on that just a little bit. One of the main things I want to talk about today is the problem of man-made fibers, the price in the cotton, and maybe just kind of a what might turn out to be a controversial discussion on one way to make the cotton competitive again. First, we'll just talk about some things that are topical to cotton. You guys that want to jump in here, just go right ahead. I suppose first we should discuss the recent volatility in the Forex markets. The ECB announcement of continued quantitative easing was not at the level many traders thought. The oversized short euro-long dollar, short euro-long dollar trade was unraveled quickly and violently, I might add. The Financial Times article that ran the wrong story early in the day confused matters, helping direct that market, and just created momentum to press the dollar far below what would seem reasonable, given what we think is the increased probability of a short-term interest rate increase by the Fed in their December 15-16 meeting. The stronger euro is clearly not what the ECB wants, and they may need to take additional action to curb the stronger-than-desired value of that euro. World economies currently continue to be rather, quote, stale, and the recent U.S. dollar is expected to further hamper growth in emerging economies that are dependent on raw material exports, and that's actually most of them. I think that most central banks will wait to see what the Fed does in December and see the Forex response to that action before taking any kind of action. China will likely have to depreciate their currency again, though the action they took day before yesterday argue that that may have been the devaluation they want to make for a while. I expect really this is not enough. This is what I said the last two times they've done this. They'll probably need to do some more along the way. The yuan will probably need to decline to provide the better prospects for exports despite the internal inflationary effect. In short, the continued Forex give and take results in the beg your neighbor policy, which will continue to pressure commodity prices and provide a bit of volatility. Cotton will not be immune to that volatility, but quite frankly, I think it will be far less impacted than commodities like crude oil and metals. And now going back to the cotton market that continues to have demand problems, and where John concentrated on specific downstream yarn situation last month, I'm going to discuss things a bit more on a macro perspective. I often hear the press talk about man-made fiber competition like it's a recent development. It isn't. It's been going on for a long time, and although some things have happened in the market and in the cotton industry to improve the situation, there has not, at least in my mind, been a concerted, committed industry plan to take cotton share back on the spinning system. Much of the demand problem seen in the cotton market is not the fault of cotton as a fiber, because it's still very desirable for consumers. It's rather a problem of cotton's price relationship with competing fibers. The perception by some that cotton is a lesser eco-friendly crop than some of its competition, fiber marketing, both effective for man-made and maybe not so much for cotton, a U.S. and global economy that just cannot seem to get any real traction near term. However, the greater of these problems in the current environment, in my opinion, is price. Mills cannot be faulted for using a cheaper fiber when the consumer is struggling in a slow-growth economy. That is one method the textile industry can remain solvent and help the consumer with a more attractively priced product. Well, and just for an example, let's take a look at U.S. consumer spending. Though holiday spending this year, according to several retail sources, has been very good up to now, the consumer's been a bit frugal by historic standards since the Great Recession. If we look at the national income and product accounts transcending the recession, the PCE for clothing and footwear as a percentage of total PCE spending has fallen about 14% from the first quarter of 2005 to the third quarter of 2015. And that's about $230 per person loss in spending for clothing and footwear. That loss is in addition to the loss in share. The ERS reports that from 2005 to 14, the U.S. per capita all fiber usage fell 16.6%. Cotton plunged 28.3%, and man-made fiber slipped only 7.5%. Part of the reason for that decline is a function of positive and effective marketing by the man-made fiber business, but much of the problem is also fiber pricing in an environment where consumers are more price than fiber discriminant. Cotton's biggest competitor on the cotton global system is polyester. The price of polyester has recently fallen sharply, particularly with the collapse in crude oil prices. In China, polyester at just below 47 cents is just barely over half the price of the domestic cotton fiber. Though not as dramatic, the price relationships in major spinning areas of India and Pakistan are similar, with polyester fiber remaining very competitive against, well, really all fibers, not just cotton. The world share for cotton on the spinning system has been falling for several years. The share has been falling really since 1990, but rather precipitous since 2001, when cotton share was about 40.7%, plunging to 27.7% in 2014. It's expected to fall at least another 0.6 percentage points in 2015. While share was being lost, seed technology has increased markedly. If weather cooperates in a typical season, the U.S. farmer has a better quality fiber for the textile industry than it did even a few years ago. Fiber characteristics have improved and pest management's better, but yields have not increased to the degree necessary to really compete against a chronically lower priced fiber. Input costs have been curtailed or at least more manageable because of the new technology. The recent decline in energy prices, by the way, helps considerably for input costs, and that decline has been very timely. There are a lot of moving parts for the reason for relatively weak demand for cotton. But if we distill the problem to its simplest form, cotton prices are too high to gain share against its much cheaper price competitors, primarily polyester. The cotton industry can't afford to wait for global growth to increase the size of the fiber pie because the share continues to fall too sharply on the spinning system. Given the high level of debt the countries have had to accumulate to remain competitive with each other, that could take years anyway. Despite strides in the cotton quality and farming practice in the U.S., we saved input costs and reduced the amount of chemicals used to grow a crop. Regardless, the cost of production remains too high. The cotton industry needs to do to the chemical fiber industry what Saudi Arabia has done to high-cost producers in the crude oil industry. However, at this time, cotton prices are in kind of catch-22, not low enough to eliminate or even intimidate competition for fibers, but not high enough given the high cost of production relative to yield to expand area and be profitable. One way the problem, and admittedly not the only way, is to change the technical emphasis of seed development from quality and pest management to yield enhancement. I know some will argue that a 32% increase in U.S. yield since 2000 is impressive, and it is. However, it's just not enough. Yields in Australia, Brazil, China, and Turkey are sharply higher than U.S. yields, and they're getting 8 or 10 bales per acre in some cases. That sounds, in the U.S., sounds phenomenal. However, if someone told you 10 years ago you'd have all the computing power that NASA used to put a man on the moon in your smartphone, that wouldn't be believable either. Australia's averaging just over 4 bales per acre. Brazil, China, and Turkey are looking at about 2.8 bales per acre, and the U.S. is at about 1.7. We as an industry need to do better than that if we're going to be really competitive in the global market against the fibers that are in some cases half the price of cotton, and are readily acceptable, at least now, by consumers. So that's kind of my little rant today. I wanted to put that out there and have you guys get a response from me. What do you think about that?
Anybody got a response?
I think when I go do 20 farmer meetings in January, I want Kip to come along and tell them that what they need is lower prices. That'll be a winner. But it's true. But it's true. In fairness, I'm the one that should say it, being the economist on the program. This is an adjustment that needed to happen in about 2012, but it's been prolonged partly from China holding all this inventory off the market. It's artificially kept the price of cotton high and kept it from doing what it should have done, which was get lower a lot earlier and bring us back to an equilibrium.
You know, Kip, have you ever been into a Lululemon store? For those yoga pants, those polyester yoga pants, are those really cheap? I don't think so. Even though polyester is 45 cents a pound, those things are $100 a pair. You know, it's difficult to make the argument that polyester is beating us, you know, on a pricing standpoint because of the poor consumer. It's maybe because of the profit margin for the retailer, but I don't think it has anything to do with the consumer.
Cheryl, how many colors of those yoga pants do you have?
I'm trying to think of how many colors I've observed.
I apologize. That was a rude comment.
I think that's an excellent comment that Gerald was making there, because it just goes to another point. I think, Gerald, what you're talking about is marketing, and I really believe on a commodity basis, if you look at this just from a true commodity, and you're going to compete commodity to commodity, prices mean everything. On the marketing end of this, and I made a comment in here that I do think that man-made marketing has done a fabulous job of convincing consumers they need to buy synthetic fibers. There is another whole part of the world outside the U.S. where people are spending what I consider, yeah, you're right, yoga pants for $100. Sorry, that's not what I'm involved with. But a lot of the world right now in a middle class or lower consumer is really buying a cheaper product in relative terms than they can for cotton, only because of the spinning end. It has nothing to do with the marketing end. That's where I think a lot of the marketers have just been phenomenal in the way they've done that. So that's another part of this thing, and I didn't get into that on this one, but your point is excellent and well made, I think.
But, you know, Kip, also, I think the yield enhancement, I think part of cotton's problem is, you know, the man-made fibers industry has done a great job talking about how, you know, environmentally insensitive we are. You know, yield enhancement can only help that in terms of, you know, pounds produced per acre foot of water or per acre inch of water. So, you know, if you can enhance the yields substantially, you know, that takes away that argument from the man-made fiber producers.
Sure.
Kip, we've had something unusual here. We don't usually have questions, and we are almost flooded with them. So let me give you one here. Do higher yields make sense when overseas spinners require a higher quality cotton to run efficiently in the mills? Any thoughts on that?
I'm not sure. Ask the question again. I'm not sure I understood your question.
Do higher yields make sense when overseas spinners require a higher quality cotton to run efficiently in their mills? In other words, and I think it goes to this, and look, we don't know that much about seed technology, but it's what I've heard is, you know, you can kind of go with really high yield or quality. That's what this question is that the demand is for the higher quality cotton. That's what we grow here. Are we supposed to give that up and just go after super high yields and just fall in line with everybody else that produces the lower quality cotton, which is where the glut is?
Well, I don't think that's I don't think you're getting a whole lot of lower quality cotton in Australia. I think that's a good quality cotton. I don't think you have to give up. Again, you started this, you prefaced this right and put me in my place, so to speak, because I'm not a seed technology expert. However, given the technology we have now, I don't see any real reason why in the cotton genome you can't have these clever people go out here and find a way to enhance the yield on high-quality cotton. Now, if it is a fact that in order to get high quality, you've got to have get a high yield, you have to have low quality, then, you know, all bets are off. I change my tune immediately. But I have to presume that you can still have a high quality and a good yield. It's being done other places. I don't know why it can't be done here.
What's the yield in Australia?
Australia, I think it was a little over 4 bales per acre or average right now. That's been for about the last 4 or 5 years.
Let me jump in on that if I may. But you have very little dry land acreage in Australia. Yes, there is some, but it's truly at the margin. And we can't say that about the rolling plains of Texas and the high plains of Texas. That, of course, being our primary production state. So,
certainly.
Yes, we can compare yields. We have to compare yields. But at the same time, we can't compare them country by country because of the different lands, the different soil types that are there. Probably, I would not disagree with Kip, that we probably are in a situation where we need to pay more attention to yields because, again, we look what we're seeing in China. And I've not seen the new data coming out of China now that they have limited where cotton can be grown, but the old data includes areas that very small areas that are very highly intensively managed, so those yields tend to explode a bit compared to the high capitalization yields, base sure. yields that we get here in the United States. I'm caught somewhere twixt in between, and referenced earlier, and just can't get into it right now, but was in a meeting last week. John Robinson was in that same meeting, and a gentleman from USDA commented that basically cotton had somewhat been caught with its pants down, and the chemical fiber industry had just absolutely jerked them off, that they were prepared for this new consumer, and the cotton industry was not prepared for this new consumer, and that's where we lost much of our market share. And went ahead, they indicated that we're losing market share every month, and still do every single month. We lose market share. So whatever the problem is, it's not been fixed. It's not there. Not been any attempts there to do anything. That cotton has fallen out of disfavor. But again, to that point, who is demanding cotton? Here in Europe and in the United States, it tends to be the higher level consumer, the consumer that's willing to pay more for an end product. And that is at one place where we've lost a lot of our customers, vis-a-vis Gerald's profit margin on his yoga breeches. The cotton was obtaining a good share of the market, and at the same time, selling high-end products, and now we've lost our high-end products to the chemical fibers, and that's added to the problem. It's difficult not to take the argument that we definitely need to get back and make cotton the fabric of our lives, and advertise and market cotton again, since we basically quit doing that. Twixt in between, Kip, I come down on both sides of the argument or debate.
Here's a question. How should the cotton industry change its marketing message to better compete with synthetics? Gerald, you got any thoughts on that?
You can't fight, you know, every fire that starts out there. I mean, I think the chemical fiber people have their marketing budgets are humongous compared to what the cotton folks have. But, you know, I don't know. It seems like the only people in the world who are trying to fight this battle is the United States. And we can disagree on how effective they are, but we seem to be the only country in the world that seems to be trying to fight this battle against the man-made fibers. And it's their argument seems to be, you know, environmental. You know, there was a discussion the other day in India about, you know, cotton needs a story, you know, from a marketing standpoint. I'm thinking, what's polyester's story? They don't have a story, and they're taking you know, market share away from cotton. So we've got to tell a story to get market share back. I didn't understand that argument at all. But this argument that somehow, you know, we are, or the man-made fibers are greener than cotton, that's got to be battled somehow in a big macro sense to get away from this idea that cotton is just terrible on the environment.
Well, Pat, I would get back to your question per se. What does cotton need to do to attract a demand base? Unfortunately, it's gotten to the point I would turn the question back and say, what has cotton been doing? And I think that's more of the issue, is that cotton has not had a marketing plan to take to the consumer, to take market. We have basically sat back for 10 years now and lived on our laurels and basically have done nothing. Maybe we continued some old tried programs and never stepped up to realize that they were minuscule and there was nothing innovative. We have to come forward with innovative programs. Do I have any? No, I've not thought of any, not been working in that regard. But just as cotton was starting to begin to lose share, we saw all kinds of programs come forward out of the chemical fiber industry. You know, the point was made, and I echoed the point a couple of weeks ago. Texas Tech, their football program came out in all Under Armour. Under Armour had the advertisement to any store you walked into that said cotton is the enemy. Cotton did not attack that, but all of a sudden Texas Tech said, wait a minute, Under Armour, if you're going to support this team, you're going to come out with cotton. Under Armour addressed that situation and bowed to what Texas Tech required. Probably no other athletic team in the United States has done that. They could. There's everything out there is now has to be out of the box, and cotton is still deep within the box.
Any other thoughts?
Well, I hope to get folks started talking about this. I think I was successful.
Well, yes, you were.
I don't know. Excuse me one second. I just wanted to say I don't necessarily, and I think I said this early on, that this is not the only solution to the problem. I am not a fan of low prices necessarily. And the idea of low prices cure low prices, you know, I'm not out here advocating the farmers get a lower price. Whether it's marketing or whether it's yield enhancement or whether it's some other method of letting the consumer know they need to be buying cotton instead of man-made fiber, that's sort of what I wanted to get in this conversation today. And I think we started that direction. Hopefully some folks will start thinking about, like OA said a while ago, we're not marketers here, but there's some folks out there that are. If we can get them thinking about how to market cotton, I think it's going to help all of us, quite honestly.
And this might be a topic that we need to talk about more in the future. Maybe we need someone to come on that can address a little bit more of what's new and different out there and innovative, what's on the horizon that people are starting to do, because we'd love to hear about it if there's something out there. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. Just to let you know, exports came out. Sales this morning was 78,700 for cotton. That's 73% under the previous week and 64% from the four-week range. Cotton was down 13 at the time this came out. Now it's down 43. March is at 64.38. So, and we can still talk about anything, but I'll just put it out there just to ask, and this kind of comes into the category of what is the forecast for prices? How low can we go now? Let's start. John, can you give us your thoughts on price range for cotton, how low we can go, how high we can go, and also if you've got any ideas for farmers on marketing thoughts?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'd size up the WASD like the one a month ago, that it was, you know, neutral and didn't give me any kind of big fundamental reason for changing my expected price range. And then what you just said, Pat, with the here we've had some really strong export sales for 3 weeks and now it's dipped back down, you know, that little dance of quantity demanded to price fluctuations has been going on now for a year, and that suggests to me that, you know, we're going to stay in the same range, or this isn't what's going to break it out. So I'm still left with the range of ICE futures that, you know, that we've continued to see from through the 60-cent range up to about 68. So just weekly indicators to the big picture WASD numbers, I don't see any reason. I don't see what's going to break us out of where we've been.
Now, what about December? What about next year?
Yeah, December next year. You know, it's been somewhat higher, but it's, to me, it's more of the same. You know, it was 65-something yesterday, right, and probably a little lower now.
65.33.
Yeah. I could tell a story of, you know, low planted acres in a weather market in the middle of the summer that might get things revved up a little bit and push us over 70. The trouble is if that's what pushes us over 70, with a little fund support, it may not last. It may not last till harvest time. I'm still looking at kind of similar influences on the 16 crop that we've had on the 15 crop. So I'm still looking for a sub profitable range of futures, probably as high as maybe 72, 73.
Okay, Gerald, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know that John's nickname is Mr. Sunshine, so gee, John, that's really.
I went to the Carl Anderson School of caution, pessimism.
You know, even though export sales were not particularly impressive, I mean, we'd had a string of good export sales. We don't really even need to average that much for the rest of this crop here to still do 10-2, much less 10 million bales. It wasn't that long ago that I could have easily made the argument for export sales as low as 9 million bales, but I think if USDA's numbers are right, particularly on the consumption side, you're looking at a pretty tight situation out there, and I think prices have a real good opportunity to climb to the upper 60s on this crop year, and certainly in the mid to possibly high 70s for 2016. So I'm not. There's a lot of headwinds. Don't get me wrong. You know, economy, demand. Competitive prices out of polyester, no doubt about it. But I think that we've got a real shot at seeing some pretty good prices down the road. How low can we go? You know, I don't know. There's probably nothing that says that we can't go back down to 60, 61, 62 cents. But I definitely think that with USDA's latest report, and I think some more numbers coming out later, vis-a-vis still a little bit smaller China crop. It's got to be a smaller India crop. That whitefly infestation in Pakistan, we saw what it did to the yields. You know, unless Donald Trump was able to limit immigration of the whitefly to northwestern India, you know, from Pakistan, I don't know how those guys couldn't have been impacted over there in India. So that crop's got to come down a little bit. We've got the smallest crop, I think, in, 30 years, in Uzbekistan. I've been waiting a long time to be able to use that word in a sentence. But so you've got a really tight situation out there that seems to be developing. It's going to take a little time to play out, but I think prices stand a much better chance of rising over time than they do falling.
OA, what do you think?
Well, I was very excited by this supply-demand report. I thought it told us a real story with respect to the lowest level of quality stocks outside China and the U.S. that we've seen in years, possibly the lowest level of quality stocks outside China that we've ever seen. And it's the market itself all of a sudden took the 16 to deck 17, we started seeing some 66 cent quotes on that. We started seeing life of contract highs in the distant month. There is nothing out there in 16. There's nothing out there in 17 at this point that suggests that this tightness is going to improve. In fact, what's out there fundamentally at this point suggests the tightness is going to be squeezed even further. So I found it to be, as one person said, it's hard to call it bullish with the world stocks being 100 million, but at the same time, it's certainly a very positive report. And what I think it says basically is that demand vis-a-vis production is in fact larger than we are recognizing, and that we're going to see a continued decrease in production. Granted, consumption now, what used to be maybe a 3% annual increase, is down to about a 1.5% annual increase. that production is slowing. So I don't fear the prices. I mean, we're, what, 3 cents, 4 cents above where we were last year, and I guess it sounds like if we replay the comments, we're just as bearish last year as people were. I'm just as bearish last year as people were, just as bearish this year as people were last year, yet we're 3 or 4 cents above that same level. So maybe something has slipped in there and brought these prices higher that's fundamentally based. And I would tend to agree with Gerald that given the lack of supply that's out there, I'm not one to be particularly high on the quality of cotton that's in China. It's now another year older. Again, sitting around a table in Washington last year, there was temptation just to zero out the Chinese stocks, but there was also very solid reasons historically that in the past when USDA has done that, all of a sudden those stocks surfaced as usable. The biggest problem with the Chinese stocks is that those stocks now are in a situation to compete with the poor quality stocks that are coming out of the U.S., and that will hurt the poor quality stocks that we continue to pull out of the U.S. now that we've had the weather problems. But with the weather problems that are out there, I would still look to see the U.S. crop at least 100,000 bales smaller than it is, so I think stocks are a lot tighter than the market is suggesting, or I think the market is suggesting stocks are a bit tighter than the USDA numbers are.
Or do you agree with Gerald on mid to high 70s for new crop?
Yes.
Okay. And where do you think support is for old crop?
Well, I think probably we've spent the whole week now consolidating around 64.5 cents, so I would tend to think now we've got another run possibly if we break. We've got another run somewhere between 63.5 to 64 cents, and I think that will hold us now. I think we'll find two things going on. I think we'll find a bit of mill buying that steps in now just below 64 cents, and I think we'll see what longs that step in around 64.5 hold their positions through the high 63.70s. So I think support is down at just below 64 cents.
Okay. Okay, Kip, what are your ideas?
Well, I hate to go last because I kind of think it's already been, everything I was going to say has already been said. I think the lows for current crop are probably to 62, 63 cents. It may be a struggle to get it down to 62 because OA makes a good point. So did Gerald. You know, mill buying shows up pretty well in there, just above that level. So I think I think 62 cents is probably going to be a low price for current crop. I certainly can't argue that the stocks worldwide, particularly quality stocks, are getting tight. If you need that cotton, you pretty much have to pay up for it. So I think that new crop, December 16, we could see stuff in the prices there in the 70s. High 70s might be a stretch, certainly, but if you get that, I don't know that you hold it very long. I think that's an opportunity. If we can see that, I think that that any farmers need to get some stuff done in the mid to high 70s. So I'm kind of in that range the same way that kind of OA and Gerald are. I hate to put you on the spot, John. You're like Johnny Raincloud today, but usually I'm in that saying, you know, I'm the one that wants to push the price down, but right now I think we're in a pretty good range, and I'm a little more optimistic new crop because of the quality situation than I have been the current crop.
All right. Any other comments? All right. Well, let's wrap up our meeting for today. We want to thank you for joining us. Thanks for Kip for being our lead speaker. Thank you to Dr. O.A. Cleveland, Dr. John Robinson, and Gerald Niepur, our cotton panel, for being with us today and giving us their thoughts. Also want to recognize again our sponsor, Bayer Crop Science, and thank them for all that they do. So that's it. Thanks for being with us and joining us today for the Ag Market Network.